This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And boy, am I excited. It feels like we are here. We're on the doorstep, less than 2 weeks away from week zero. It feels like just yesterday we said we're 60 days away, we're 90 days away, and now we're less than 2 weeks away from Farmageddon over in Ireland, from Hawaii and Stanford out in Oahu, a game that we will be at, not broadcasting, but we'll be live there on Friday and Saturday. A little more information on that coming up here on the podcast. But I'm also excited because our regular here on the pod, who has been a busy man at VSiN, Adam Burke, joins us to go through the G5. And by the way, just keep the five-star ratings coming in. It's really awesome to see them roll in. And, you know, every once in a while, you get a rating that has some constructive criticism with a five-star rating behind it. And this was from Scuba 061, five stars on iTunes. Thank you very much, Scuba. He said, "This is one of the first shows I found when looking for betting insights for college football. Tim Murray," thanks, Dad, "is a great host along with all the regulars. I wish they'd cover more G5, but their content on P4 is insightful and entertaining." Well, guess what, Scuba 061? The man to talk G5 is Adam Burke, who in our guide wrote up the American, CUSA, MAC, Sunbelt, and those two independents, Notre Dame and UConn. Mr. Burke, you ready to dive into the G5 here?
I'm ready, man. The first thing I got to do, though, I got to apologize to you because you reached out to me and asked if you could do the independents. And I said, no, I got it. And that's just because the college football guide's already 186 pages. I don't think we really needed 15 pages on Notre Dame for the 2025 season. So I apologize, but I saved you from yourself.
You know, I just wanted to go deep into Joey Fagnano and UConn. I mean, that was a really reason I wanted to do the two independents. Yes, by the way, I just want to give people the insight to my help, as I put up air quotes that no one can see, to Adam Burke, who just put together this 186-page beast. I didn't ask to do the SEC or the Big Ten or any meaningful. Hey, man, I'll do two teams to help you out. And now that the independents have lost UMass to the MAC, that's the type of guy that I am, Adam. I just want to know, that's the type of teammate I am here at VSiN to say, hey, Adam, I know you're writing up four conferences and writing about power ratings and head coaching changes. I got you if you need me. Two teams. That's the type of guy I am. I just want to let you know.
You are quite the company man, Mr. Tim Murray. Look, I mean, you know what, though? You've been doing a lot of these podcasts throughout the course of the summer, keeping this feed going, which I greatly appreciate because, you know, it's a good platform for us to promote what we're doing over at VSiN.com, a VSiN Pro subscription, the college football guide that we've referenced already. And I think, I want to say, this is our most popular kind of standalone podcast with the network, you know, because we archive all the versions of our shows, obviously, into hour-long blocks. But in terms of things that aren't on the broadcast channel, I believe this is the most popular one, correct? And a lot of it has to do with you, sir.
Let's keep it rolling, baby. Let's keep it rolling. Now, I told the story last week, and I forgot his name, so I wanted to give Chris a shout-out for stopping me on the boardwalk at Funland in Rehoboth, Delaware, as I was about to embark into all the air quotes fun at Funland. For those who know, you know what I'm talking about. But I wanted to give a shout out to Chris for telling me that he and his degenerate buddies love the podcast, and I'm fired up for another year. As we will have three episodes a week on this feed once the regular season starts, and Adam, obviously, as long as he wants to be, will be on this feed each and every week. But we got a lot to get to. I wanted to jump into this. So you did write up Notre Dame, and I know I just told Scuba 061 that we are going to be diving deep into the G5, but I wanted to start with Notre Dame Miami. By the way, the AP poll came out on Monday morning, the 11th, and we now know officially we will have three top 10 matchups on campuses in week one. Not too shabby. LSU Clemson, that'll be number four. Let me double check. That'll be a top 10 matchup there with number 4 Clemson hosting LSU, number 1 Texas at number 3 Ohio State, and then number 6 Notre Dame at number 10 Miami. And we saw a crash in the total, Adam, today on this Notre Dame-Miami game. We talked about it briefly on the podcast last week, and then on the VSiN weekend morning line, both Saturday and Sunday, I gave out under 53.5. I had no idea that we would see this thing crater to 50.5 at Circa and DraftKings, 51 at the Westgate Superbook and a handful of other shops. So as you dove into Notre Dame and you wrote them up for the guide, would the under make some sense to you for this week one game between the Irish and the Canes?
Yeah, I got to say, in looking through my tens of thousands of Google Docs, it took me a little while to find the independents because I haven't really been asked about them here lately. But, you know, look, I mean, there's a few things at play here, right? I mean, first of all, we have no idea what the hell we're going to get out of the quarterback position for the Fighting Irish this season. You know, I mean, CJ Carr is probably going to be a pretty good player, may take a little bit of time, assuming it's him. You know, we'll see if it's a timeshare, if anybody else gets a chance, stuff like
Adam,
that.
Adam, I'll jump in real quickly. So
did they name him already?
No. I'll give you the insight that I've heard coming out of camp with, you know, my friends on the beat. This is not a fake, you know, competition. This is not, I don't know if you could glean more on what's going on at Ohio State, but I raise an eyebrow a little bit about Lincoln Kienholz maybe being the starter. Maybe he will be. Bobby Carpenter really liked him when he jumped on the pod this summer. But everyone that I've talked to says it is a true competition. No one has really separated themselves. I tend to agree with you. I think CJ Carr probably will be the guy Sunday night, Labor Day weekend down there at Hard Rock Stadium. But the surprise is that Kenny Minchie is a guy that I think many of us thought probably would transfer out this spring. He did not. He stayed. Steve Angeli was the one who transferred out. And this is a true 50-50 race. So, you know, Mike Denbrock, I'll say this. His history with quarterbacks, at least recently, Jaden Daniels down at LSU, Riley Leonard last year at Notre Dame, he likes some mobility, and that would lean Kenny Minchie. But, yeah, very curious to see what they do ultimately at the quarterback position. But once again, that's why we talked about the under on the podcast last week and as well on this weekend on the VSiN weekend morning line, where, as you I'm sure gleaned from your write-up, Notre Dame's defense probably is the strength of this team.
Either that or the running back position.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
I mean, you know, it's one of those things where they're going to be able to run the football. They're going to be able to really condense the game, and the defense is going to be fantastic. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if Chris Ash is an upgrade from Al Golden. I guess time will tell. I see Al Golden, you know, had the Bengals in midseason form during their first preseason game. But, you know, look, I mean, Notre Dame is missing some of their top guys from last year, but also have a lot of their top guys back. So there's a lot of continuity here with this team. And the other thing, I mean, you know this as well as I do, their deep playoff run. One of the reasons why Notre Dame has no interest in going into a conference is because if they do what they did, they get to keep all of the money. So their NIL budget really increased. Not that it, you know, needed that much of an increase, because a lot of people, I'm sure, are funding that. But you know, they were able to go out in the portal, get some wide receiver help. I think defensively they'll be very, very good again. And honestly, I don't like this Miami team really coming into the season. I realize there's a lot of talent, you know, down there in South Florida, and they've got some pretty deep pockets as well. But I am not a Carson Beck believer. I'm not a Carson Beck guy coming off with a major injury either, which I think is, you know, maybe part of the reason why this total did come down a little bit, because we don't know what Carson Beck's going to do coming off of a torn UCL. I mean, it's a common, you know, baseball injury, not so much of a common football injury. I have Notre Dame a 5.5-point favorite here. I am a little bit lower than the market on Miami, maybe a little bit higher on Notre Dame, who I have favored in every game and almost all of them by double digits. As far as the move on the under goes, I mean, it makes sense. The thing you worry about, obviously, for Notre Dame is, I mean, this is a late game. It is a 7:30 kickoff, but I'm sure it will still be gross down in South Florida. Hot, very humid, very disgusting. So you kind of worry about that a little bit with a team not in midseason form yet. But, you know, I mean, for me, I think Notre Dame under a field goal is a good play. And, you know, the total, I mean, I can't fault people for jumping in on the under. And doing so now makes me wonder if maybe there's something out there of like, hey, Carson Beck kind of looks bad or something like that.
Yeah, I think up front, this is going to be two stout lines, both defensive and offensive. I think Notre Dame defensively their weakness and, you know, for what they want to be, which is winning a national championship. I think their interior defensive line has some questions. I'm excited about their edge rushers. I think their linebackers, even though they lost Jack Kaiser to the NFL, will be very, very good. Leonard Moore stepped up. He's a preseason All-American. It's crazy to think you lose Benjamin Morrison and they upgrade at the cornerback position. And then, you know, in the safety position, a lot of production loss with Xavier Watts, but there's excitement about, you know, the folks that will step in next to Adon Shuler. So I think the defense won't really take a drop off. And I think if you're Marcus Freeman, you want to kind of lean into your offensive line, your stable of running backs that you alluded to. So glad to see him on the right side of a movement. Now, hopefully we can just cash that ticket. You know, you wrote up, as mentioned, not only the independents, but four other conferences. I wanted to hit on a couple of line moves in week one and get your thoughts on it involving teams that you wrote up. And we'll start with South Florida, Boise State. You wrote up South Florida and the American, and I was very surprised to see the massive move. I wasn't surprised to see a move, but to go from opener of 10 in favor of Boise State, now under a touchdown is where we sit for Boise State, South Florida. You talk about gross. How about 5:30 kickoff on Thursday, August 28th in Tampa? That is going to be humid as all get out. I like Boise State to win their conference. I thought this would be a tricky game. If I could have got double digits, which I did not, I would have been interested in a dog. Are you surprised to see a 4-point move in favor of the Bulls in this week one game?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the travel's a factor, right? The weather's a factor, as we know. You know, and I think that there's just going to be a lot of, you know, kind of negative sentiment towards Boise State early on in the season, not having Ashton Gentry. You know, a team that obviously made the playoff last year, didn't look great when they got there, but, you know, people are going to think, well, okay, they can't replicate that. They can't repeat this. You know, they do have Maddox Madsen back, but, you know, what are they going to do with some of these other positions, stuff like that? The thing for me, and I have this game lined at 7.5, Boise State is a road favorite here. The thing for me is I just don't really think South Florida is all that good again, but they spent a lot of money this offseason, right? They were able to bring Byron Brown back once again. We'll see if he can stay healthy. They brought in, you know, a couple of power conference transfers at running back and Cartavius Norton from Iowa State, Sam Franklin from Oklahoma. And I think that you just sort of expect kind of at this stage of the game, right? This is about the time when head coaches start to turn their programs around. You know, this is about the time that Alex Golesh, he's in his third year, back-to-back 7-6 seasons. The third year is kind of where you think, you know, things take hold, even though there's so much transfer portal activity and all of that. I mean, Todd Orlando's been a pretty good defensive coordinator throughout the course of his career, although, you know, not so much here at South Florida. The thing for me is this. This is a team that's been terrible against good teams. They're 1-8 against teams with a winning record under Alex Golesh. And they got torched by Alabama and Miami last year, which is going to happen. But Tulane dropped 45 on them. Rice had 550 yards on them. UAB had almost 500 yards on them. Like, to me, this defense isn't very good at all. So I guess if you're worried about Boise State's offense because they were so Gentry heavy last year, then I could see it. Because I think the expectation is that South Florida's offense should improve, keeping them more competitive in games like this. Like I said, I mean, it moved down towards my line and went through my line. This is not a game that I'm going to play. But I do think that it will be an interesting litmus test for both of these teams, specifically Boise State, in a game that they're supposed to win, obviously losing, you know, the biggest chunk of their production on offense.
Yeah, we've talked about the Mountain West quite a bit here. We had JVT on the podcast last week, and, you know, he and I came to the same conclusion. I thought minus 125 was too good to pass up on Boise State to win the conference, but I was not racing to play for them to make the college football playoff, knowing they have this game against South Florida. They have a road trip to Notre Dame. And, you know, this South Florida team, as you mentioned, with Brown at quarterback, now's the time you want to bet on him because he tends to get a little bit nicked up. And later on in the season, we'll see ultimately how he's handling it. Once again, you wrote up the American and the MAC, and Ohio is a team that has been bet against in week one. They open up on the road at Rutgers. By the way, I had to laugh because I don't know if you saw the Paul Feinbaum clip on that made the rounds over the weekend. He was on a show on Netflix with my friend Danny Kluppinger, and he said, the Big Ten pretends like they invented football. Well, technically they did. Rutgers-Princeton, first ever intercollegiate football game. So social media had a little fun with that. But I digress. Ohio, a team that went from a 10-point underdog at open now to a 14-point underdog. How big is the drop-off for the Bobcats after winning their first conference title since 1968? They lose their head coach, Tim Albin, as he goes to Charlotte.
Yeah, and by the way, I think it's a good hire for Charlotte, which we may talk about in passing here when we talk more about the American. But I think there's a couple of things here. The first one is, you know, I don't think Ohio has that much of a drop-off. Their schedule is tough. I think that's the problem. I think they really have to go 7-1 in conference play here to be able to go over their season win total. And I don't know if they're going to do that. But they did bring back C. Bangura, who was their running back a couple of years ago. He went to Minnesota for a year. Now he's come back. So Anthony Tyus, who, by the way, one of the typos in our college football betting guide, if you want to point one out, I mentioned that he ran for over 1,200 miles last year.
That'd be a long.
Incorrect. He ran for over 1,200 yards. But, you know, they got Parker Navarro back. Bangura's a guy who's been in the system, a guy who, you know, is obviously very familiar with Brian Smith, who was the offensive coordinator, who was the head coach in the Cure Bowl with Tim Albin going down to Charlotte. And also, you know, Albin left behind one of the defensive coordinators in John Hauser. So this is an Ohio team that has continuity on the sidelines. They've got their quarterback back in Parker Navarro, who's a dual threat type of guy. The defense is certainly where you would be a little bit worried here because they are taking on a Big Ten team that can push them around in Rutgers. So that would be the worry for me. But also, I mean, look, you know, this is a game of the total in the mid-40s, right? So Navarro's back, probably going to take okay care of the football. You know, the lower the total, the more that points matter. Even in college football, which is higher variance than the NFL, if you can get a 2-touchdown head start in a game with a lower scoring expectation, that's not bad. I mean, I have Rutgers an 11-point favorite. If we see, you know, 14.5 kind of pop in places where, you know, we can actually take it as opposed to the faraway places where it is now, this is one I may be interested in just because Ohio doesn't strike me as a get blown out kind of team more often than not. Now, with that being said, keep in mind that, you know, there's a lot of stuff with these group of five teams that we don't know about. And even some of the power five teams too, power four, I guess. Any line move at this time of the year, it's entirely possible somebody's suspended, somebody's not playing, and we just don't know about it yet. So you got to tread lightly, I think, with some of those games that have the big line moves, because maybe there's some news that we don't know that somebody out there does know.
I want to stick with the MAC and go to Saturday, because the team that you picked to win the conference, we'll dive more into it, is Toledo. And year after year, you know this conference is so well. Toledo is almost always going to be the most talented team. Now, will they always win the conference? Well, that always remains to be seen. We saw Ohio win it last year. Miami of Ohio won it a couple years ago. But when Toledo punches up, they tend to do pretty well under Jason Candle. Since 2021, as an underdog, Toledo's the best cover team in the country. Now, they've only been an underdog 8 times since 2021, but they're 7-1 ATS. I say that to look at the season opener at Kentucky. And credit to Paul Stone months ago on this podcast, he said he liked Toledo plus 11.5. Well, guess what? That number is long gone. One of the bigger moves of week one, Adam, Toledo now an 8.5-point underdog at Kentucky. And remember, last year they went to Stark Vegas and punked the Bulldogs. Could Toledo pull off an outright upset in week one against Big Blue Nation?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things in play here. I mean, Vince Karras has done such a good job with this Toledo defense. Of course, just a legendary head coach in the state of Ohio at Mount Union with the Purple Raiders. And, you know, he's been really, really good as a defensive coordinator here with Toledo. And Kentucky is a team that a lot of people seem really down on for this season. And I can understand why. I mean, you know, Mark Stoops, you talk about a guy who finds a way to win some games that they probably shouldn't. That's something he's done very, very well at Kentucky and has had a good defense for the most part. But it certainly feels like this year there are a lot of people who are just selling as quickly as they can the Wildcats stock that they may own at this point in time. And I think there's also some expectation here for Toledo where, you know, they bring back both of their quarterbacks, their starter Tucker Gleason and the backup Chip Traynham is back, a name that I'm sure gives you PTSD thinking about him and what happened a couple of years
plunging
ago.
Plunging into the end zone right in front of my eyes. No, not that I don't forget that at all.
Yeah, well,
on my birthday, no big deal.
Well, we already talked about Notre Dame for 20 minutes on the pod, so I had to make sure I threw a shot in there where I could.
Well, once again, it's the drinking game. Every time I can mention Notre Dame, it's a drinking game. People get drunk all the time listening to this podcast.
I'll tell you what, that's the best way to listen to this podcast, if we're being honest.
The truth.
You know, look, Junior Vandross, 85 catches, so they lose one of their top wide receivers, but they bring back their second best wide receiver, again, with an offense that has a lot of returning production, a lot of continuity to it. The defense has some guys to replace, but it's not like they're replacing Quinyon Mitchell, who, you know, was a first round pick in the 24 draft. So, you know, I think this should be the class of the MAC. And I think people just do not like Kentucky. And also, Kentucky is a team that's typically, you know, typically predicated on running the football a lot. So it's kind of the concept I talked about in the previous game with Rutgers in Ohio, where you got a total in the, you know, we'll call it the upper 40s, 48 and a half, with a double digit number, a Kentucky team that doesn't blow a whole lot of people out, a very athletically talented Toledo team. I could see this one. You know, this is one that I definitely understand. Again, not a play that I really jumped in on. I play a lot of season win totals and stuff at this time of the year. But this is one where, again, I think people are just very, very low on Kentucky.
Well, a team that has been kind of a popular niche discussion on this podcast is Southern Miss, and you wrote them up for the guide in the Sun Belt. What a fascinating dynamic between Southern Miss and Marshall this year, as Marshall wins the conference a year ago. They say, Charles Huff, whatever, you can go check and see what's out there. He said, fine, I'll go to Hattiesburg. And now he took a lot of that roster to Hattiesburg. We've seen significant movement on their win total. It was once upon a time 4.5 -110. It's now 5.5 everywhere. I took some 4.5 juiced over on this Southern Miss team. But you look at the week one line, they're hosting Mississippi State. And you can make a very strong argument that Hale State is the worst team in the SEC. And now they've got to go on the road to Hattiesburg for the Charles Huff era. So you've seen a line move of 14.5 at open, Adam, down to 10.5. Southern Miss, another team, we're going to talk coaching changes. You wrote that up. Massive upgrade at the coaching position. Massive influx in talent as well. They have the preseason offensive player of the year coming down their way at the quarterback position. So there's a whole lot going on for Southern Miss. What do you make of this Golden Eagles team? And are they going to be competitive week one against Mississippi State?
Yeah, I mean, I think they certainly have the chance to do so. You know, I mean, this is going to be a really massive game for them with the Charles Huff era, as you mentioned. Seems like you've got a reinvested fan base, you know, not only that, but also the athletic department, you know, going out there and getting Charles Huff, because this is a program that's been bad for a while now. And, you know, I mean, this is a program that, you know, has something of a storied history down there in the state, and the opportunity to play, you know, a big brother at home is definitely something that I think is going to resonate with this team. Huff, you know, I mean, look, there were a lot of people very, very upset in Huntington with him gone. I mean, Marshall had to cancel their bowl game appearance because they didn't have enough people to play because so many guys hit the portal. And a lot of them, just as you mentioned, just simply followed Huff down to Southern Miss. And also, you know, they bring in some SEC transfers at wide receiver, at running back, on the offensive line. I mean, this is a team that was minus 19 in turnover margin last year, so they were probably going to get better no matter what, but they're definitely a positive regression candidate with new talent, with a new head coach, who, of course, you know, brought his defensive coordinator with him as well. And I think things are going to be interesting with Blake Anderson, too, a guy that is highly motivated to fix his image after what happened at Utah State, and there were some things that he didn't properly report, and then, you know, all of a sudden he wound up losing his job. So there's a lot of highly motivated people within this program. And I think the line for the season win total now has gotten a little bit out of control. I think it's gotten a little bit too high at this point in time. But this is a game that they're going to be fully invested in, to say the least. And for Mississippi State, you know, I mean, again, this is a program that, as you mentioned, is going to be towards the bottom of the SEC. I mean, do they come out ready to play? Is this a game that they get up for at all? Yeah, it's the season opener, but it's going to mean a lot more to one team. And while that team is less talented, you know, you could see why the betting market is certainly interested in backing the Golden Eagles here.
I always love finding the G5 teams hosting P4 programs. We've talked a bunch about the September 20th game between Memphis and Arkansas, that one being at Memphis. The very bizarre Oklahoma traveling to Temple spot, that is pretty interesting, September 13th. But this is one certainly to circle. All right, last line move from week one involving a team that you previewed is FAU at Maryland. And if you listened to the podcast a couple weeks ago when we were out at Big Ten Media Day, I had a really good conversation with Mike Locksley. I'm a fan of Mike Locksley. He said he lost the locker room. There's a lot of uncertainty with that program going on right now. Some people saying that he should be out as the head coach. We'll see how that ultimately goes. They've got questions at the quarterback position, but they play FAU. And this is a team that I really wanted to talk to you about because the name Zach Kittley might be familiar to bettors. And we talked a lot about Western Kentucky in 2021 when they brought in Kittley as the OC. And they also brought in Bailey Zappe, a couple of the wide receivers from Houston Baptist. And they went 10-4 ATS that year at Western Kentucky. He left. He went to Texas Tech to be their OC. And now he's the youngest head coach in college football, in FBS college football, I should say. FAU from a 17.5 point dog down to 14.5 and circa even down to 14. What do you expect from this FAU team? Is it going to be fireworks like we saw in Western Kentucky back in 2021 with this offense?
Well, this is another one where, I mean, the offense should clearly be better, right? There's no doubt about that with Zach Kittley. And also when Kittley was at Western Kentucky, he was recruiting Caden Veltkamp to Bowling Green, Kentucky, that is, to Western Kentucky to be a Hilltopper. Now, of course, he left before Veltkamp got there. He wound up going to Texas Tech and being the OC there. But Veltkamp stuck around in this offense, which had a lot of the fingerprints of Kittley, you know, there with the Hilltoppers, now transfers to Florida Atlantic. So you have a quarterback who knows the system, because otherwise this is a huge overhaul, right? To go to kind of this air raid West Coast type of offense, fun and gun, whatever you want to call it, right? But also remember the name Easton Messer. He was at Western Kentucky last year. He transferred in here to FAU. He's going to be one of the best group of five wide receivers out there, so long as he's able to stay healthy. So this is an offense that should get a hell of a lot better. With that being said, you got a first-time defensive coordinator here in Brett Dewhurst. And if you don't have your timing down in week one, if you're not deep enough into the route trees, all of that, when you run this pass-heavy scheme, you can go three and out a lot. And so that's going to put a lot of strain, a lot of stress on this defense if this offense isn't humming, if they don't have their timing down, if they don't have their tempo down, all that kind of thing. But to your point, I mean, Maryland is a team, we could call it turmoil, I guess. You know, state of flux is probably underselling it. Tumultuous, whatever you want to say. That's a problem heading into the start of a season where you've got an FAU team that should be excited about where things are going for them now. So look, I mean, there's still a double-digit dog. There's still not really a huge expectation that FAU wins this game. I have this game line 14.5, so I'm right in line with the market now. But that's the big question to me is what does Florida Atlantic's defense look like in this game? Because if the defense looks okay, I mean, you can't do anything with this game, obviously, because you're watching it play out. But going forward, that would say a lot to me about Florida Atlantic, who right now I do lean under on their season win total. I have them for about 4.4 wins. So under 4.5 would be where I land. But you know, if this offense looks good and this defense looks competent against a Big Ten team, that's a team I'm going to have to reevaluate very, very quickly.
Paul Stone regarding Maryland pointed this out last week. Maryland 1-18 straight up when an underdog since the 2021 season. So we will see how the Terps do this year. They actually have an advantageous schedule in conference where they don't play Ohio State, Oregon, or Penn State this year. So we'll see if the Terps. I know Wes Reynolds plugged his nose and took over 4.5 wins in the guide on the Terps. Well, FAU is a part of the American. We're going to dive into the American on the other side of the break. But just a reminder, folks, we're hitting the road. Yes, VSIN hitting the road and headed to paradise. We'll be broadcasting live from Hawaii with special editions of VSIN Primetime on Thursday, August 22nd, actually Friday, August 22nd, I beg your pardon, and the College Football Tailgate Show on Saturday, August 23rd, just in time for Week Zero kickoff. It's all presented by our friends Nahaku, Hawaii's finest jeweler, proudly sharing the spirit of aloha since 1924. Discover an incomparable collection of Hawaiian and island lifestyle jewelry featuring unique designs crafted with Hawaiian gold, pearls, and rare gemstone. Nahaku's timeless pieces capture the beauty, tradition, and spirit of the islands, perfect for a special gift or personal keepsake. You could visit one of their many locations, not only in Hawaii, but across the mainland, and explore their full collection at Nahaku, that's Nahoku.com. Don't miss out. We'll be live from the islands, once again, brought to you by our friends at Nahaku on Friday, August 22nd, and Saturday, August 23rd. All right, let's take a break. When we come back on the other side, let's dive into the American. Adam has a best bet on a future on a team that may be a little bit off the radar. It's the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. Adam Burke, my partner in crime for so many episodes here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast with us. He wrote up the American, Conference USA, MAC, and Sun Belt, and we're going to run through those conferences, hit on a couple of best bets, and let's start with the American. Big name change, by the way. No more Athletic, right? Did that go into your handicap of the American Conference that they will no longer be the AAC? Does that hurt their chances to make the playoff, Adam?
Well, maybe they're a less athletic conference at this point. I don't know, but I will tell you this. You know, we had the, I think it was the morning of the NFL guide was when the Minkah Fitzpatrick, Jalen Ramsey deal dropped between the Steelers and the Dolphins. So we had to go in and make adjustments like right away to make sure that people were getting the most updated version of the guide. This was one where I had several AAC mentions throughout the guide. We had to do a find and replace and get rid of all of those because it's not the AAC anymore. I guess it's just the AC. Should we call it like the Slater Conference or something like that?
I don't know. I think AC, I think Atlantic City, but
that's true. Yeah.
And yeah. Anytime we can, you know, me and Will Hill on VSiN Primetime last week started to break into a Hang Time theme song, the very famous Deering Tornadoes squad that seem to be playing for a championship every single Saturday morning. I don't know how that worked with their schedule, but I don't know. They were always playing for some sort of championship.
You know what? Did they take out Athletic because Americans, by and large, are getting less athletic?
I don't know. They call themselves the P6 Conference, and then you're taking out Athletic, so I don't know if that's a negative or not. All right.
Also, like the Eagle mascot, his name is Soar. Like, that's horrible.
Why does a conference need a mascot?
I don't know.
All right.
Enough. I don't know. I mean, based on, I mean, there's three teams called the Owls. So I guess true. It makes sense. That,
this is, you know, the
gonna,
Owl
their
conference.
Mascot's going to be the Eagle.
It's a hoot of a conference, might I add.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know that sponsor that you just did the read for? They're going to leave us after that bad joke.
Nahaku, don't leave us. I will do no more jokes. I promise. All right. Let's dive into it. And when you look at the odds board, it's not full on Big 12, but it does feel like it is a pretty open conference at the top. When you look at Tulane, Memphis, Navy, UTSA, Army kind of hanging on fringe wise from an odds perspective there. So look around, you're going to see differing numbers out there depending on who you want to bet, South Florida as well. But before we get to your pick to win this conference and a best bet by you, I'm curious your thoughts on this Tulane team, because John Summerall, as you has pointed out here for, I think, years on this podcast, he is an elite G5 coach, probably going to be, if I had to guess, an SEC coach next year. And when the Jake Retzlaff saga kind of started out in Provo, people were wondering, where is he going to end up? And Tulane, without really a clear answer, excuse me, at the quarterback position, said, hey, come on down here. You can walk on and you'll be in the mix. And he's very much in the mix. What do you think of this Tulane team, who is at most shops the favorite to win this conference?
First thought, they're talented. I mean, they are very, very talented. Even losing Mekhi Hughes and Mario Williams, they're still very, very talented. You know, I mean, New Orleans is a fun place to go to school. You know, it seems like they are willing to spend some money here to help out this football program. At the same time, like last year, Darian Mensah was a surprise starter. Like nobody expected that. It was going to be Ty Thompson from Oregon in all likelihood.
Yep.
And then he like barely played at all. And then Mensah, of course, transfers out, which was pretty strange. But the Jake Retzlaff thing is interesting to me because I actually liked the quarterback room to begin with. Right. Retzlaff was a late add to this write up for me. So I had already written out, you know, thinking about, is it going to be Brendan Sullivan from Iowa, Donovan Leary from Illinois? Honestly, I think Caden Semenza from Ball State should have been the starter. And maybe he still will be. Who knows? But then all of a sudden they bring in Retzlaff and it's like you have four pretty reasonable options now. I mean, obviously, you know, calling a quarterback who transfers from Iowa a reasonable option might be a stretch, but, you know, getting away from Brian Ferentz can't hurt. So, you know, I think there's four guys that could reasonably start for this team. Offensive line only gave up 18 sacks last year. Looks good again. That's a position that actually doesn't have as much turnover as the skill positions do. Here's the problem that I have with Tulane. On the defensive side, Greg Gasparato, last year's defense, they gave up 33 or more points to Kansas State, Oklahoma, Louisiana, North Texas, Memphis, Army, and Florida, right? So basically all of the decent offenses that they played. They allowed 10 or fewer points six times. So boom or bust, feast or famine, whatever you want to call it. And when they did play Navy, Blake Horvath was hurt. So that's another game where they maybe would have given up 30 plus points. So this defense is not at all reliable to me. And when you look at their average, it's going to say they gave up 20.6 points per game, 5.3 yards per play. They lost a couple of NFL draft picks as well. Like, I don't think this defense is very good. So even though I like the schedule for Tulane, and I think that they can still have a good season, I don't think they deserve to be the favorite in this conference. And the defense is the reason why.
Have seen a little bit of Northwestern money come in week one as that number has climbed or gone through seven, but Tulane still almost a touchdown favorite against the P5, P4 program in Northwestern there in week one, a noon Eastern kick time down there in Tulane. And we mentioned it already on the podcast, a Power 4 program going on the road to a G5. I will say, one of the more underrated games of the early season, that September 13th showdown, Duke at Tulane. By the way, Tulane hosting a pair of P4 teams is pretty impressive by this program to get it there. All right, let's get to the team that you have put a bet in to win this conference. And once again, look around because these numbers will vary. The best number on Meep Meep UTSA is at circa 5-1. DraftKings sits at plus 450. I think BetMGM also at plus 450. So Jeff Traylor, you know, it was thought that he would be gone I don't know how many times. Well, he's still there. UTSA opens up the season with a challenge going on the road to College Station, to take on Texas A&M. Why ultimately do you think UTSA wins this conference and is worth a play to win this conference at around 5-1?
So you mentioned the Texas A&M game, right? And I have UTSA an 18-point dog in that one going to Kyle Field, which, by the way, I went to a concert back in May, the Troubadour Festival in College Station, and it was like on the green or whatever you want to call it next to Kyle Field. Good Lord, that place is enormous. Like, just unbelievably large. Didn't get to see the inside or anything like that. Security was very tight around the festival, as you would expect. But I couldn't do the Brad Powers and walk in and, you know, record a team preview or anything like that. But the place is enormous. Anyway, I think UTSA is really good. I have UTSA in my projections down for 8.76 wins. Their season win total right now is 7.5 with some overjuice. I like Owen McCown a lot. I love that they return their top two rushers, most of their top receivers. You know, they're going to be just fine on the offensive line. This should be a really, really good offense. What really hurt the Roadrunners last year was their defense. And they did lose a couple of big guys. Jamori Robinson had double-digit sacks. Martavis French had 16 tackles for loss. But this is a team with 88 sacks over the last 2 years. They find pass rushers. They find dudes to get after it and create negative plays. Last year, they simply didn't have enough depth. So what did they do? Well, they hammered the transfer portal. They went as hard as they could in the portal on the defensive side. And I think this is something that we really need to talk about, you know, in the lead up to the seasons going forward. Now, if you're good on one side of the ball, like UTSA is on offense, bringing back a lot of returning production, you can leverage the portal to fix the other side of the ball. If you don't have to fix your whole program and replace a bunch of guys at a bunch of positions, and you can simply focus on one side of the ball, I think that gives you an enormous advantage, particularly with these group of five teams, because you're getting poached, right? You're just, all your players get taken by power four programs, stuff like that. So if one side of the ball is in good shape, you fix the other one. And I think UTSA did that, because this is a UTSA team. Last year, I mean, most horrific loss in the country was probably the game that they blew to Tulsa, 46-45. They blew a fourth quarter lead against Army. They blew a fourth quarter lead against Rice with 4 seconds left. They just didn't have enough depth on defense in the second halves of these games. Now they do. They get Tulane at home. I have them favored in all 11 games outside of that Texas A&M game. They're favored on the road at South Florida for me. Favorite on the road at North Texas for me. You know, Army is down. They don't have to play Navy. Like I said, they get Tulane at home. They don't have to worry about Memphis, even though I don't know what the Tigers are going to be like this year. I think UTSA is the best team in this conference, and I think plus 450 or whatever the best price is you can find out there is a really, really good look.
If you're around, if you're coming out to Circa to sign up for Millions or Survivor coming up in a couple of weeks, 5-1 right now sits there at Circa is the best price that I saw out there in the market, plus 450 at a bunch of national shops. I want to get quick thoughts on the other favorites, but I do want to jump down to a win total that you like. And, you know, I joked to Wes last week when he was on the podcast that he convinced me to get in on under 7.5 wins on Army. And I think you might get me there on North Texas. I was looking at the juice that was available out there on North Texas over 6.5 wins. Best juice I saw was at DraftKings minus 125. Back end of the schedule seems pretty manageable. Road trips to Charlotte, UAB, Rice, and then you wrap up the season at Temple. Non-con could be tricky with Western Michigan, Washington State, and South Alabama. But North Texas is a team that a lot of people that I respect seem to be interested in, maybe as a long shot to win this conference, have some success. And I know something that you wrote about, Adam, it has a lot to do with what they did at the defensive coordinator position.
Yeah, if you've got the right coordinator in place, somebody who is good at getting through to the players in a very quick fashion, good at kind of setting the goals and the standards and all of that, I think it helps a ton. And when you talk about, you know, all the roster turnover and all of that, if you can gel quickly or the schedule allows you the opportunity to gel quickly, then I think that's something that's a really big benefit. So the offense is going to be fine with North Texas, right? I mean, Eric Morris runs the air raid. He's always going to find guys. He was a wide receiver. You know, I think he played at Texas Tech, I want to say, or at least was a position coach there. So he knows how to recruit the Lone Star State, knows how to find talent at quarterback, at wide receiver, all those kinds of things, right? So the offense will be fine. But they hired Skylar Cassidy, who's just 31 years old. He's been a DC already at Sam Houston and also Abilene Christian. And something else I mentioned in my write-up here, to give you an idea of how badly North Texas wanted him, they're paying him nearly $500,000 to be a defensive coordinator at a group of five school. They wanted this guy badly, and they got him. And so I think this is a really, really good fit for North Texas, a guy that's going to change to a four-man front. So we'll see how that kind of works with North Texas largely running a 3-3-5, you know, over the last few seasons. But I think that this could be a team that improves very, very quickly. They've got Reese Poffenberger at quarterback. He came over from Miami, didn't really play behind Cam Ward. He was a pretty good FCS quarterback prior to that at Albany. So I just think this is going to be a better offense, which is going to help the defense. And then Cassidy is going to help the defense even more. Again, you mentioned there's some juice on their win total at 6.5. I have them at 7.3 wins. Huge game in week two against Western Michigan, who I also played a season win total over on. But, you know, I just think they've got toss-up games early on, but the back of the schedule looks really good, as you mentioned, with UAB, Rice, and Temple. Now, two of those games are on the road, But UAB is probably going to have fired Trent Dilfer by then. Rice is running a triple option for the first time. And Temple has been a disaster forever. So I think North Texas gets there. And I do think, I don't love 12 to 1, especially because I like UTSA at plus 450 so much. But I can see why. I believe that number has been moving down a little bit here over the last few weeks with people kind of buying in on the mean green.
So you mentioned it, and I was going to wait till the end, but let's do it now. Rice, it's a really, really hard program because it's in the middle of Houston. It's really, really strict academic restrictions. And from all accounts, they don't really have a ton of money. They go out and they make a unique hire, and you wrote up all the coaching changes, and this is one that you wanted to highlight. They went out and got Scott Abel. And anytime we could talk about a guy that was a D3 head coach at one point in time, I'm in. He was the head coach of Washington and Lee in the ODAC. He left that post after leading the Generals, of course, because it's Washington and Lee, to multiple appearances in the NCAA tournament to go to Davidson, another like-minded academic institution that I believe doesn't have a ton of cash for its football program. Maybe Steph Curry will infuse it into the basketball program. He was at Davidson, success there. And Rice, who fired their coach midseason, went out and poached him. This is pretty fascinating. I don't know if it leads to success year one, but I think there's a real potential that Rice, if this hits, could be a tricky team to play against in the coming years.
So I have long wished for a middling to bad team, really in any conference, to go out there and do something like this, right? Like you think about a team like Georgia Tech, for example, you know, when they were running the triple option under Paul Johnson, like they were never the most talented team, but the option always gave better teams fits and gave them the opportunity to go out there and go 7-5, 8-4, make a bowl game, probably win it because option teams do well in bowl games, you know, stuff like that. So, but you know, prior to Matt Campbell taking over at Iowa State, this was something that I kind of lobbied for with the Cyclones of like, hey, you can't compete in the Big 12 because you're not getting these huge quarterbacks and these huge skill position guys. Do something completely different that's miserable to match up against. And now, obviously, they're, you know, really good under Matt Campbell running, you know, not the option. But I think it's a great idea for Rice, you know, because like you said, I mean, this is a very hard school to recruit. Their academic requirements are really, really high. Enrollment is super low. You're fighting against all these other programs in the state of Texas. It's just a hard job. And so if you do something different, right, I don't think that's a bad idea. And I think Scott Abel is a good hire for that, right? Because you brought in Mike Bloomgren, you wanted to get tougher. You know, he's the offensive line or offensive coordinator at Stanford, big offensive line background guy. Like, okay, so you're going to run power football in this conference and like you're going to try to keep pace with all these teams that score a ton of points. It probably wasn't going to work. Bloomgren did the best he could. I love this idea. That being said, I would really love this idea if Rice was still in Conference USA. Mm. Because the problem here is you're going to run a less efficient, less talented offense that Army and Navy already run. So teams in this conference are already used to seeing this. Now, I'm sure Abel will have little, you know, different kinks and stuff like that, you know, in the offense. But look, I mean, for a team that was minus 37 in turnover margin over the last 3 years, running the football is probably a good idea. But that's the problem, right? You have two service academies who are going to be more disciplined, more efficient. They've been running that offense for, what, 30 years or more? So, like, that's the problem I have here with Rice. So I like under 3.5 a good amount for Rice. They have a brutal schedule. And again, you know, they're in a conference where teams see this, teams prep for this. So it's going to take a lot of time, but I like the idea of trying something different instead of just doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for a different result.
So UTSA to win the conference, North Texas over their win total. And you also are intrigued by Rice there. I won't go through all the teams in the American because, you know, we can't do a podcast for 7 hours here because we have other G5 conferences to hit on. So make sure you check it out. Adam wrote up all of the American, CUSA, MAC, and Sunbelt. You mentioned you would have much rather have seen this if Rice were still in the CUSA. Well, let's get to CUSA. This is a conference that Liberty dominated 2 years ago. And then last year, I don't want to call it a disaster, but for the amount of money that they put into their program, I think it was fair to say it was a bit of a disastrous season there for the Liberty Flames. And they were one of the worst cover teams in the country a year ago, just 3-9 ATS. I think they were favored in almost every game in conference play. They ultimately go 8-3. They lose their bowl game. They lose three conference games, which is really unacceptable for Liberty. Do the Flames bounce back this year? And looking at the market, BetMGM is at minus 115. FanDuel's at plus 115 for Liberty to win this conference.
Yeah, I think anything plus money on Liberty to win the conference is good. I think plus 115 is fantastic. I think it was plus 125 at DraftKings when we put the college football guide out 6 days ago. So this is one that, you know, people have taken notice of. I mean, they don't play Western Kentucky during the regular season, who's clearly the second best team in this conference. So the only time they would run into them would be the conference championship game. They'd be at home for it. So I think grabbing this number now is a really good position to take. And if you're worried about them by the time we get to December, well, then, you know, you could play back on the other side or something like that. But I think disastrous is a good word for their season last year. I mean, they lost to Kennesaw State as a 26-point favorite. They barely beat a New Mexico State team that isn't very good. Needed overtime to beat FIU, who's just been in shambles ever since Butch Davis, you know, got upset because they wouldn't give raises to his assistants. But I will say this. As underwhelming as last season was for Liberty, I think Caden Salter just wasn't the guy to run Jamie Chadwell's offense. And obviously, everyone knows the importance of Caden Salter, really good player, you know, better runner than a passer. And I think that's the thing. Now, Chadwell brings in Ethan Vasco, who he recruited to Coastal Carolina while he was there. Vasco is going to know how to run this offense because the Chadwell offense is all about pre-snap motion, getting numbers on one side of the field, throwing the ball out into space. It's a very pass happy type of scheme. And I give Chadwell a lot of credit because he reinvented his offense for a Liberty team that had to run the football because Salter was limited as a passer. Now I think he can run the offense that he wants to run. And so I think that's a really big lift for them. Defensively, I think they should be just fine. They bring back a lot of their, you know, top players. They will have to get back after the quarterback a little bit more here, but I mean, this is, I think everything stems from the offense for Liberty, and Vasco is the right guy to run this thing. So I just don't see anybody coming close to Liberty. I mean, Western Kentucky, like I said, probably second best. Louisiana Tech, their defensive coordinator, Jeremiah Johnson, is now at Coastal Carolina. The offense was atrocious for the Bulldogs last year. The defense was elite. They were a top 10 unit in points per game allowed or yards per play allowed, one of the two. So he's gone. Jacksonville State's replacing everything, including a head coach, Rich Rod, now at West Virginia. Sam Houston replacing their head coach, Casey Keeler's at Temple. UTEP's not there yet. I think Middle Tennessee could be good. I think 15-1 to maybe make the title game, and then you could take Liberty. That's not a bad look, but Liberty's just so much better than everyone else here, and it's very clear to me that I think Vasco could be the difference because he's going to run this offense the way it's designed to be run.
Well, you mentioned Middle Tennessee. That was another best bet that you wanted to talk about. Their win total sits at 4.5. I think I saw some 5.5s out there, but best number I saw, FanDuel minus 154 to the over on 4.5 wins. Derek Mason, year two down there in old Murfreesboro with the Blue Raiders.
Yeah, I think this is one where, you know, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's a good coach, right? I mean, you know, things at Vanderbilt were kind of hit or miss when he was the head coach, but he's been a good defensive coordinator. And I think it was tough, you know, replacing Rick Stockstill, who had been with the program since 2006. You know, I know last year, Middle Tennessee's only wins were Tennessee Tech, Kennesaw State, and UTEP, but they really went shopping, you know, for JUCOs in the portal. This offense has to improve. There's no doubt about that, but they do get Nick Fadiato back at quarterback. I think that helps. And also, I mean, this is a defense that should get better with Mason. You know, I mean, last year was a bit of a transitional year. That's supposed to be his side of the ball. Conference USA is pretty bad, as we know. I think UTEP could be better, but Middle Tennessee avoids them. They avoid Liberty. The roster's better. I think the Blue Raiders make a bowl game this year, or at least they're bowl eligible with 6 wins. So I do like them over 4.5 for their season win total. Again, I just think that there's more talent there now. And the defensive side of the ball was, to me, a bigger issue than the offense. And when you have a defensive-minded head coach who's done it at power conferences, who's been a head coach, I'm willing to pay the juice here on this one. It is a little bit high, you know, seeing minus 160, minus 150 on it. But I think this Middle Tennessee team, I think 5 wins is kind of the floor for them. And 6 is something that's definitely attainable.
Well, this we should call your guide to midweek games, because CUSA, MAC, Sunbelt, all those teams will be playing in the middle of the week during October. And that's when Adam shines. His brightest is during that time. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a conference that is near and dear to Adam's heart. It is near and dear to all of our hearts as bettors, the MAC, the return of the MAC. We'll talk some MAC, some best bets as well. Quick break. On the other side, we're talking MAC and Fun Belt on this Group of Five deep dive.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Adam, let's take care of some business first. Let the people know what offers we've got over at VSiN.com. You are our managing editor over there, so you are doing all things, running that website, our guides as well. So what do we got running over at VSiN.com?
Well, right now, if you're so inclined, and I personally think you should be, our $9.99 introductory offer, right? So you get your first month for under $10, and you get our NFL guide, which came out last month, which is still very relevant. I know we've had a lot of injuries here in you know, training camp and in the first week of the preseason, but you know, that guide is still very, very relevant. You got our college football guide, which came out 6 days ago as we're recording this on Tuesday, August 5th. Team previews for all 136 teams, 29 season win total bets from Steve Mackinnon, all kinds of feature content in that guide as well. And then also the last week of August, our NFL 2.0 refreshed betting guide, taking a look at the post preseason updates of, you know, who's in, who's out, who looked really good in the preseason, how have the awards markets moved around, some contest strategy stuff as well, whether you're in a pick'em contest or a survivor contest. So $9.99, you get those three things. And you also get to see what we do on a daily basis for a month, for 30 days. So it's a good time to do it. You know, even if you're not sure, even if you don't necessarily want the help during the season, you can get the preseason stuff. And I think that's tremendously valuable as well. So vsin.com/subscribe, give us a try for $9.99. I mean, you know, you're paying $20 for guides, $15 for guides that are out there, the ones that you can see on the newsstands and at the bookstores and all that. Hey, you can get three of ours for $10 essentially. So I think it's a great deal at vsin.com/subscribe.
It's crazy not to. We've got friends on this podcast, Phil Steele, Brett Ciancia. We love their work, but you got to have as many guides as possible, and you get all ours for $9.99, which, as Adam just pointed out, is a great value out there. All right, let's jump into the MAC. We got some coaching changes I want to talk about, but let's jump right into one of your favorite plays. Let's go to Kalamazoo. Talk some Western Michigan. The Broncos, year three for Lance Taylor as the head coach of Western Michigan. Win total, interesting. It depends on what you want to do, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, if you want to be bullish or if you want to be a little bit more conservative. BetMGM and FanDuel both sit at 4.5, juice at around -$1.50 to the over. But if you think Western Michigan gets to a bowl game this year, wins 6 games, DraftKings is over 5.5, +145. So what about this Western Michigan team has you intrigued this year on their win total?
Well, I would say this. I think the 4.5 with the extra juice would be the way that I would go. But I don't mind over 5.5 either. I think this is an improved football team here. So a few things in play, right? So first of all, get your beverages ready because we're mentioning Notre Dame again.
There we go.
Lance Taylor, right, was the OC at Louisville, position coach at Notre Dame. Now he brings in Chris O'Leary as the defensive coordinator, who was on Notre Dame's staff with him, coached safeties in the NFL last year, as Scott Power is now an assistant with Wisconsin. So you've got this Notre Dame connection, right? A lot of continuity. It should be on both sides of the ball here for this team. Western Michigan has gotten progressively better on the offensive side here under Taylor. And I really like, and I assume he's going to get the starting job here, but Brady Jones, a JUCO transfer from Riverside Community College in California, 44-8 touchdown interception ratio almost 4,500 passing yards for him. He's a big dude, gives them a higher upside arm. They've got two good running backs, including a guy who was originally at Michigan. I think that this offense has the chance to improve quite a bit again, and they improved a full yard per play year over year from Taylor's first year in 23 to his second year in 24. The defense is what has to be fixed, right? So this is another area, like what I talked about earlier. If your offense is in pretty decent shape and you could just focus on the defense in the portal, I think that's a really big value for you. So they brought in, according to 24/7 Sports, the second best transfer class in the MAC. And a lot of those guys are on the defensive side. And now you've got O'Leary back there as the DC, who I like Scott Power. I thought he was a really good hire that Taylor initially made. But I think O'Leary is a really good hire, too, and maybe even a bit of a slight upgrade. So, you know, I think they could beat Eastern and Western, or Eastern and Central, Central with a new head coach in Matt Drinkle. They get Toledo and Ohio at home. So I think those are, they could split in those games. Yeah, they play Michigan State and they play Illinois. Those are going to be tough. But I think that this is a team that has enough opportunity here in their toss-up games. They'll be favored against Rhode Island at home, big favorite against UMass on the road, and Ball State at home. Like, to me, that's three wins right there. And that's before their first bye, where I think they can absolutely get better after the second one. I'm down on Miami this year. I think they could win that game on the road. I just think this is a team that has a chance to overachieve and overperform a little bit. So I like over 4.5 with the extra juice. If you go for 5.5 and go for the bonus, I think it's a worthwhile endeavor too. But I mean, again, I think 5-7 is the most likely outcome for this team. You know, so I would play the, you know, -150 on the over. But I thought, and I wrote this in the guide, I thought there was enough value over 5.5 at plus money to go ahead and take the shot with that as well.
So I get to do a couple bowl games every year. And last year I went down to the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl and I was doing the sidelines for that game. And I was very impressed by what I saw from Miami. However, a lot of those pieces that impress me in that bowl victory over Colorado State, Adam, are gone. And as you joked, Brett Gabbert and his 30-year-old playing career is out the door. They are dead last, Miami is, in returning production offensively in the nation. 136 out of 136. They do bring in Daquan Finn, who tried it at the P4 last year at Baylor. But the win total sits at 6.5 for the Red Hawks this year, and a pretty challenging non-conference schedule, as they tend to always do. They want to go out and, you know, make that money in the preseason. So when you look at Miami, win total sitting at 6.5 this year, you mentioned already, why are you down on Chuck Martin's squad this year?
Well, again, I mean, maybe Daquan Finn comes in and plays really, really well. I think the most hilarious thing is, while I was trashing Brett Gabbert for playing college football for like 20 years, Daquan Finn's first collegiate season was 2019, which was also the first one for Gabbert. So, yeah, 24-year-old starting quarterback here. You have a grown-ass man quarterback for Miami of Ohio, and maybe that'll be enough, right? He's definitely a dual-threat type of guy. Here's the problem that I have. Double-digit dogs at Wisconsin and at Rutgers. The early bye maybe helps a little bit. Dog to UNLV, right? So to me, they're going to go 1-3 in non-conference. They'll beat Lindenwood at home. I'd be shocked if they lost that one. But outside of that, like, I don't know that this team can go 6-2 in conference. I mean, they do play Akron, albeit on the road. They get Toledo at home, but they go to Buffalo. I think Buffalo is a pretty good team this year. I think they're a decent bet to win this conference. I mentioned it already. I think Western Michigan has a chance to win that week 9 game in Oxford. There's just, you mentioned it. I mean, there's zero returning production essentially for this team. And so defensively, they got to bring in a lot of different guys. Also, something kind of underrated here, they have a new special teams coordinator. And the last 3 seasons, they've been phenomenal on special teams.
Got their kicker stolen something. By Alabama. Remember
that's
that
right.
quote?
I do remember that. That's right. So look, I mean, Chuck Martin almost always finds a way. I don't know that he can find a way with this team this year. I mean, I have them an underdog in 4 of their MAC games, all 3 of their significant non-conference games. Like, it takes a lot for them to go 7-5 this year, I think. So it's hard to count out Chuck Martin, but I don't think he's got the horses or the schedule this year to get a lot out of this team.
Yeah. And, you know, for him this year, year number 12, he was sort of on the hot seat now, won the conference 2 years ago, won your bowl game last year. I think he's in decent shape. So maybe okay to have a little bit of a step back. I wanted to get to some of the coaching changes in this conference. And we'll, you know, we'll keep the Notre Dame theme going here. Since you mentioned Lance Taylor, he was once upon a time at Notre Dame. Chuck Martin, he was at Notre Dame. And Northern Illinois, of course, beat Notre Dame in week two last year. Not that I brought it up at all on this podcast throughout the fall season. But Northern Illinois made a really unique hire at the offensive coordinator position. And you wanted to dive into this one. They hired Quinn Sanders, who is the head coach of Division II Charleston a year ago, to join Thomas Hammack's staff, who, just remember, Thomas Hammack did have the most satisfying dump of his life at the Potato Bowl in late December a year ago. Just wanted to bring that up in their win over Fresno State in the Potato Bowl.
I've been to Boise. I don't know if I had a satisfying dump there or not, but I did really enjoy the town.
I almost got him to cry. I tried so hard. I was doing the radio interview. And his television interview is the one that went viral because he told the ESPN sideline reporter after he got doused with French fries that it was the most satisfying dump of his life. And Scott Van Pelt ended up losing it on SportsCenter. And then I went back in, man, because I knew he cried when they beat Notre Dame. I knew he was an emotional guy. I tried. I couldn't get those tears, though. I tried. I failed.
Well, I mean, there's a chance that they do some special things this year. Look, so last year, 8-5, four of their five losses by seven or fewer points. So, you know, I know that they had the Notre Dame victory. That was the only one that would be considered a close game in terms of on the winning side. So this is a team that, frankly, could have won double-digit games last year. But I love that Thomas Hammack is willing to be open-minded. We know that college football changes, right? Sometimes it changes cyclically. I think that's a word. Cyclically? Whatever. Sometimes it changes and it just stays that way, right? Well, this is a team, you know, Hammack was a running backs coach. So this is a team that's kind of lined it up, run the football a lot of play action type stuff in the passing game, kind of the, you know, throwback sort of offense. So you mentioned he hires Quinn Sanders, 36 years old, Charleston Golden Eagles in the Mountain East Conference, right? This is a deep dive hire. And I love this kind of stuff. We talked about it with Rice running the triple option. Like, I don't think it's going to work, but I love trying something different. So Sanders obviously got somebody's attention, got Hammack's attention, somebody in the athletic department. And they went, you know what? Let's run some more spread. Let's kind of spread this thing out a little bit. Let's see if we can use our athleticism in space. I love that. I love that idea. And I think it's really interesting that Josh Holst, who's their starting quarterback, said that this offense is very similar to what he ran in high school. So I think this could be a pretty dynamic Northern Illinois offense. Now, there's a chance that it all goes to hell and it doesn't work at all. But I think that this offense is going to be really, really good. Last year, the NIU defense only allowed 18.5 points per game, but the offense had its lowest yards per play since 2019. And so Hammack saw the need for change, believes in his defense enough to kind of run this spread. And basically, you know, when he talked at the press conference, he's like, look, we're now set up to run 40 passes if that's what the scheme dictates against this team, or we can run it 40 times if that's what the scheme dictates. I love this. I love that they're being creative, that they're, you know, just trying to do some different things. I think Rob Harley's a good defensive coordinator hire. He's from the Mark D'Antonio, Pat Narduzzi coaching tree. I think that's a fantastic hire. I think this team's going to play with more tempo. I don't know that the market will adjust, so I think we can bet some overs early on in the season. I know the range of outcomes is pretty wide here for this team, and they play a tough schedule in conference, but I like this team. I think over 6.5 is a really interesting bet here with them, and I think there's a chance that this team is good enough, despite the tough schedule, to be in the MAC title game. So I'm trying to be, you know, I'm trying not to get too excited here, especially because I want to see how this thing works out. But I think they could be a really good football team because they're willing to try something different.
Well, talking about trying something different, how about Bowling Green going out and making this type of splash hire as they bring in Heisman Trophy winner Eddie George. And look, this is a Bowling Green program that has actually seen some success. They didn't have a bowl win, but three straight bowl appearances for this program that was completely down in the dumps is rather impressive. Eddie George comes in, and I know he's a big name, obviously, in the state of Ohio, winning a Heisman Trophy at Ohio State, but you got to give him some credit, too, for what he was able to do at Tennessee State, getting him to the NCAA tournament a year ago in the FCS ranks. Scott Loeffler, he left to be, I believe, the Eagles quarterbacks coach. Is that right? So that, yeah, that left the opening there. What do you make of Eddie George coming into the MAC?
Well, first of all, I think the most surprising thing about this is that you didn't mention that they brought in Drew Pine.
Yes. I figured Notre Dame. Yes.
Legend. I figured the Notre Dame thing, that would be the first thing you'd mention. You'd be like, you know, Bowling Green, well, they brought in Notre Dame transfer Drew Pine. Well, oh, and by the way,
also Arizona State and Missouri transfer. And somehow, I don't know how that guy has eligibility left, but, you know, leave it to COVID or whatever.
I can't remember, you know, friend of the shows, friend of kind of everything, Eric Haslam over at Haslam Metrics, phenomenal college basketball site, by the way. I can't remember what he calls the guys who have transferred to like three or four different schools, but he has a name for them, and it's not super PC, but
I'll just say this about Drew Pine, and I mean with all due respect, he deserves to be in the MAC. I just congratulations, you got some wins at Notre Dame, that was really cool. You were the backup at Missouri last year and got thrust into action a little bit. This is where he belongs. Drew Pine belongs to be playing on a Wednesday night in some snow in November. And we'll get that this year.
I thought you were going to tell him to go get a job. Well, but
he's probably getting paid. I mean, I'm not going to begrudge anyone, man.
That's true.
Shout out to Diego Pavia. If he can play college football for 10 more years, I'm sure he'd do it.
Well, maybe he'll win a national championship at Vanderbilt in those 10 years.
They're built to play in January, according to Clark Lee.
I bet they are. All right. So Eddie George. Yeah, I mean, great job at Tennessee State, right? Was the Big South OVC coach of the year in his last year. You know, they probably kind of expected him to fill out his 5-year deal, but Bowling Green came a call in. And there's a couple things that are a little bit disappointing here. The first is that George came in late, right? Because Scott Loeffler took that job in the NFL. So George didn't really get the full scope of the transfer portal. That's a little bit of a problem here, especially because you lose Harold Fannin, who, you know, could be a really good NFL player one day. I guess we'll wait and see. But I think what's really interesting here about Bowling Green, you know, I just mentioned how Northern Illinois is kind of going to get away from a lot of this, you know, a lot of the zone read running stuff. They'll still do it, but not to the same degree. Not going to be as much of a power running team. I think Eddie George wants to run two tight end personnel, maybe three tight end personnel, run jumbo, you know, I mean, which is probably pretty good for Drew Pine because he's just going to be asked to complete a play action pass here and there. But I'm really curious to see with an old school pro style type of offense, which is what I expect to see out of Eddie George here. How does this work in the MAC, right? Because the MAC is not a physical conference, despite all these teams, you know, being able to have these giant corn-fed dudes from the Midwest on the lines. Like, it's not a very physical conference. It's not a power running conference, anything like that. It's just a lot of bad defense and a lot of, you know, sort of random breakdowns that lead to quarterback runs. Not a whole lot of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for here? It's kind of like a free-for-all. A lot of times it just kind of feels like playground football in a lot of ways. I'm curious to see how this works, right? So Jeff Fisher's son, Brandon, is now the defensive coordinator. So that'll be curious.
So they're destined to win 7 games, huh?
Yeah, 7-9, you know, run an 8-8 defense. I don't know. But I'm just really curious to see, like, how all this plays out. Again, I think there's a wide range of outcomes for this team. The back end of the schedule is Eastern Michigan, Akron, and UMass. So if Bowling Green starts fast, they should go over 6.5. Not a bet for me, but I am curious to see how this one plays out. But again, just another fascinating hire, you know, just one that obviously he had a pretty good turnaround at Tennessee State, but you know, now you're at the D1 level in a conference where it's hard to hold on to talent. So I'm curious to see how this one plays out, but if nothing else, I think it's fascinating to inject a little bit of life into this Bowling Green program.
Seeing Eddie George freezing his ass off on the sidelines in the middle of November with like a ski cap on is going to be fun to watch and a sight to see, no doubt. All right, we've been going for a long time, but we haven't hit the Sun Belt. You wrote up that conference as well. You've got two best bets in that conference. So let's hit these two Sun Belt win totals. And we'll start with Coastal Carolina. Look, it wasn't that long ago where you had a program that was, you know, undefeated and was kind of the talk of college football during that COVID year. And now here we are, Jamie Chadwell, as you already talked about, he left a couple of years ago to go to Liberty. Now, year three for Tim Beck, which I don't think any of us really thought that was a good hire. Win total sits at 5.5, and you get plus money to the under at Circa. What do you make of the Shants in 2025?
Well, the first thing is I wrote too much for the College Football Guide because we're just now getting to the last conference that I wrote.
See, I don't think if you had just given me those two teams to talk about in the independents, think about how much less workload you would have had. Come on now.
I know, right? I could have saved myself 1,000 words on Notre Dame and UConn. Yeah. So I don't like this team at all. I'll go ahead and start with that. I do love the defensive coordinator hire of Jeremiah Johnson. So good at Louisiana Tech last year. Top 10 in yards per play allowed. But this is a complete roster overhaul once again for Coastal Carolina. Now, I do think that the quarterback position is really interesting here. Emmett Brown, he's in from San Jose State. MJ Morris, he's been at NC State and Maryland. So the quarterback position could be pretty good here. And Drew Hollingshead was at Western Kentucky. So you better get the quarterback decision right here because they're going to throw the football a ton for this season. That's going to put a lot of strain on this defense. And while Johnson was really, really good last year at Louisiana Tech, it's also worth mentioning that of Louisiana Tech's 17 turnovers, only 5 of them were interceptions. So they had 12 fumble recoveries. That was tied for 6th in the nation. Their defense only had 22 sacks. So while I think Jeremiah Johnson is a good coach, Conference USA is pathetic offensively, just beyond pathetic. So I think that maybe their really strong defensive numbers were largely a byproduct of who they played, more so than what they were able to do, because they didn't create a whole lot of, they only had 5 interceptions, only 22 sacks, not a lot of negative plays with, you know, rushing the passer. I think a lot of it just had to do with the fact that the conference was terrible on offense. The Sun Belt is not terrible on offense. Also, this is a pretty tough schedule here for Coastal Carolina. And, you know, again, anytime, this goes without saying, but as you're playing win totals, you got to factor the schedule into the equation, right? It's super important to look at that. Charleston Southern, they're a clear favorite. Louisiana Monroe, they're favored. Marshall, Georgia State, they're favored in 4 games for me. They've got some toss-ups, but they're favored in 4 games for me. They play Virginia, South Carolina in the non-conference. East Carolina, that's not a gimme game at all. I think East Carolina could be pretty decent this year, too. I don't see this team winning the toss-up games. I don't see Tim Beck surviving this season. You got 2 coordinator changes, a ton of roster turnover, just a lot happening for the boys on the teal turf here. So I like Coastal under 5.5 wins.
All right. Lastly, Clay Helton, believe it or not, is still the head coach down in Statesboro. He is the head coach of Georgia Southern. And we get the Clay Helton return. Do they give him a video welcome back when he goes to USC week 2 for the showdown against the Trojans?
I mean, I guess they could. I guess maybe they're, you know, feeling pretty 4 kind.
4 years later, I think you're okay with Clay Helton. But yes, still the head coach of Georgia Southern. Win total sits at 7.5. Juiced under. Best juice I saw out there at a national shop. BetMGM -145. So you start the season at Fresno, which we're going to get to Fresno to close out the pod with their coaching hire, and at USC. Then you've got a couple of non-con games that you should in theory take care of business. It's a pretty high win total there for the Eagles in year 4 of Clay Helton. Do they get to 8 wins this year?
I don't think they do. And look, I mean, this is a team that I have favored in 9 of their 12 games, but they have a lot of toss-up games. I have them favored by 0.5 point, 1 point, 2.5, 3, like a lot of toss-up games for them. So I don't think that this is a very good football team. You know, a lot of people are sort of pointing out that, you know, Look, he brings back his first returning starter at quarterback in his 4 years there in Statesboro with J.C. French. Well, J.C. French also kind of sucked. He had a 17-11 touchdown interception ratio. It was the team's worst performance in yards per play, points per game, and yards per carry in the Helton era. So cool, they bring back the same starter, but he was not productive. So I don't like that. They were 6-2 in conference play, but they were minus 0.4 yards per play in conference games. They gave up more yards per play to teams with a losing record last year than they did to teams with a winning record. This is a team ripe for regression. There are a lot of negative regression signs with this team here. I don't think third-year defensive coordinator Brandon Bailey has really actually helped in his first two seasons here. They don't rush the quarterback at all. They don't create a lot of negative plays. They're going to maybe the bonding week that they spend out in California will help because they play Fresno State and USC in weeks 1 and 2, as you mentioned. But I just don't think this is a good football team. And I think they really overachieved last year. And like I said, I have them favored in 9 games, but because so many of them are toss up games, they're projected for 6.8 wins for me. So they, to me, don't have a whole lot of margin for error to get over this number. They don't have a ton of takeaways. They don't take great care of the football. There's too many negatives for this Georgia Southern team. So I like them under their season win total. And by the way, I want to mention this really quickly before we finish with the Mountain West. If you've been wondering what Hugh Jackson has been up to, I'm sure most of you haven't been. As a Browns fan, I couldn't care less what the guy's doing.
Is he still swimming in that river that he said he would swim in if they went 0-16?
Maybe. Could still be floating in it. He is the offensive coordinator at Georgia State now.
Really?
Yeah.
It is kind of funny sometimes to play that exercise. Like, where is this coach? You're like, wow, he's there now? Interesting.
It's way better to play that game than to play the, where is this guy who I grew up watching? Where's this kid playing now? Because there's so much of that. It'll be like, so-and-so junior at whatever school. And I'm like, son of a bitch, I'm old.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. All right, let's wrap with this. Week one, I like how it all comes together so neatly.
Week one, Notre Dame taking on Miami.
That
we'll
is
talk
right.
about it again.
I'll be there. Fresno.
Wait a minute. So hold up. So you're going from Hawaii straight out to Miami?
No, we'll be a
stop. Do you work anymore? What is happening?
There'll be a stopover at VSIN to work my shifts.
A stopover.
A stopover at VSIN, and then...
Are you still as pale as I remember you being? I haven't seen you in a while.
I am still pretty pale. I used the SPF 50 on my recent vacation. but yeah, we're working in Hawaii, baby. It's not like we're going to be drinking pina coladas. We will be. Well, I probably will have a couple of those, but we will be working out there. All right. So it is worth noting. But yes, the Sunday night game helped me out. So get to do the Saturday tailgate show and then take a little red eye down to Miami, catch the game and fly on back for work. But week one, as you rudely interrupt me, Fresno State plays Georgia Southern. Right now, line, call it consensus, Fresno -2. But you wanted to talk coaching changes, and we've talked about a couple of unique ones. Matt Entz, we actually played the interview that we had on VSiN Primetime a couple weeks back on this podcast feed. Man, is he an impressive dude. And also, pretty sure he could kick my ass because he is jacked. But once upon a time, won multiple national titles at North Dakota State, left to go be the linebackers coach at USC. And then when Fresno State came open, got hired to be the Fresno State head coach. So what do you make of this hire by the boys in the Valley there in Fresno State?
Well, you're so pissed off at me that you stole all my thunder and basically read off the guy's resume. All right. Well, look, I mean, I'll say this, I guess, right? Chris Kleiman's worked out pretty well,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
So, probably a pretty strong hire here to bring in Matt Entz. And, Fresno State is a team that I don't think they're going to be very good this year. I know JVT wrote up the Mountain West and probably talked about them last week on the show. I don't know if they're going to be very good, but, like, they always find a dude who can sling it, right? They always find a really good quarterback. They find either an elite running back or an elite wide receiver for the group of five level. It feels like it's always kind of been the defense where you're like, is this going to be good enough, for this team to make some noise? Well, now that you have Matt Entz for the next few years, the defense is probably going to be good enough over the next few seasons. So I mean, it's really cool too. He brought in OC Nick Davis from South Dakota. So like these Summit League guys, just kind of the respect that they have for each other, you know, because North Dakota State, South Dakota State, all these teams are like good year in and year out and all of that. Pretty interesting that those two were rivals and now they're going to work together with this Fresno State team. Like I said, I don't know how good they're going to be this year, but if you're thinking about someone who's got the chance to knock off Boise State or UNLV or whoever's favored next year, I bet Fresno State's going to be the team we're talking about.
Curious what they ultimately do at the quarterback position. I asked him, is EJ Manuel.
EJ Manuel. There we go. There's a throwback.
Hey, maybe he still has eligibility. You never know nowadays. But as EJ Warner, your starter, and he quickly said no. So not to say that he won't be, but they do have a true quarterback competition. And we get to see Fresno State week zero against Kansas as a 2-touchdown underdog.
You know what? I got to say, before we wrap up here, what an interesting cast of characters we have for the group of five new head coaches, right? You have Eddie George, Heisman Trophy winner, great NFL player. Matt Entz, who could kick all of our asses.
Yep.
You've got Jason Eck, who apparently is going to win an Emmy one day. I don't know if anyone saw his office
with
spoof.
New Mexico State.
No, with New Mexico.
New Mexico. That's right. Sorry.
Yeah. Where the kids get in free to games. That was pretty cool. That was a very enjoyable video. Trey Lamb, who's like a scratch golfer at Tulsa, played in some sort of amateur event in Oklahoma or Missouri or something not that long ago. Obviously, Dan Mullen, right? Bronco Mendenhall back in the state of Utah. What an interesting cast of characters we got for the new head coaches in the group of five this year.
No doubt. And hopefully this was a suffice to the folks asking for a G5 breakdown.
Yeah. And if Scuba Steve, I hope you liked it.
And once again, shout out to Scuba, who gave us 5 stars. Very constructive criticism, asking, I would like more, but he liked our P4 breakdown. So hopefully this was enough. Scuba Steve, damn you.
he got the double episode.
Adam, always appreciate it, man. If we haven't hit enough G5 in your life, go read all of Adam's breakdowns of these conferences, best bets. Shout out again, and you could probably dive into it more, but Zach Cohen, a new papa. Congratulations to Mr. Cohen, but he wrote up conferences in our guide. Wes Reynolds, Matt Humans, Steve Mackinnon, JVT. You guys did an amazing job, Adam, on this guide.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, shout out to Zach, who, still focused on the job while his wife is 9 months pregnant. So appreciate that out of him. Matt Devine, our guide designer. Jimmy Coleman downstairs at Circa putting together our cover for us. We got I got a really, really good team here and a lot of host participation as well. So like we said earlier, $9.99 intro offer, like the college football guide is worth that on its own. But you get a lot of other cool stuff, too. You know, we partnered with Ballpark Pal to give you some MLB betting tools since, you know, Major League Baseball season is still chugging along here.
Just bet the Brewers blindly.
Yeah, that too, right? Yeah, bet the Brewers and fade the Rockies every day, and you'll be able to afford all these trips to Hawaii and Delaware and Miami like Tim Murray.
Well, we're able to go to Hawaii because of our good friends at Nahaku Jewelers for being the proud sponsor of that trip. A couple other great sponsors you'll hear about here coming up as well as part of this podcast. So very much looking forward to being out in Hawaii in less than 2 weeks. Looking forward to chopping up with Adam all season long, as we always do. Please hit us with a 5-star review. They continue to run in and it's awesome to see. Thank you to all of you, and we'll be back later this week with another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.